there's always a conflict between a faith and a greater creator and what we human beings can achieve. And ultimately, there is a greater universe that we exist in with larger rules that will always win.
Hi, I'm Joanne Wallace, and this is the Blythe Festival Podcast. Today I'm speaking with playwright Andrew Moody, whose show The Real McCoy has just opened. As an actor, Andrew has appeared on Canada's screens and stages for more than 35 years. He burst onto the scene as a playwright in 1995 with a show called Riot. It was about the Canadian response to the Rodney King riots in Los Angeles, and it won a coveted Chalmers Award. Since then, Andrew's written many plays that bring Black Canadian stories and voices to our stages, and these include The Real McCoy. This is a story about a young, Black Canadian engineer who changed the world. Yet he remains relatively unknown, even here in his home country. In this conversation, Andrew shares how he first came across Elijah's story. He also discusses some of the deeper themes that went into this work. And finally, he shares his thoughts about what Elijah's story has to say to us today, even as we grapple with yet another wave of disruptive technology. I spoke with Andrew the day before The Real McCoy opened at the Blythe Festival. Welcome, Andrew, and thank you so much for joining us today. I'm so excited to talk about this show.
Thank you.
Let's start right away. Who was Elijah McCoy, and why did you write a play about him?
It's funny because I had never heard of Elijah McCoy, and I think most Canadians had never heard of Elijah McCoy. The only reason why I had heard of him is because I was acting in a workshop of a play written by Linda Griffiths, and she hired me to play Noel Coward, and I loved playing Noel Coward. It was great. It was fun. And then after the workshop, somebody in Calgary came up to me and said, "Hey, so that was really great." And I said, "Yeah, Linda Griffiths, she's the real McCoy." And he said, "Hey, do you know where that phrase came from?" And I lied. I was like, "Yeah, sure, the Hatfields and the McCoys, yeah." And he said, "No, actually, there was an African-Canadian inventor named Elijah McCoy who invented a lubricating cup that revolutionized steam engines, and that's where the phrase came from." And at first, I swear to God, I didn't believe him because my dad had told me about every single Black Canadian inventor and historical figure. And I thought, if my dad didn't tell me about him, then he doesn't exist. So I went to Google and I was surprised that my dad didn't know about this guy, who, and also most Canadians don't know about him. He was he was the son of runaway slaves who they'd come up to Colchester, Ontario. And he was born here in Canada and he went to school here in Canada. And because he went to school in Canada, he was able to have the opportunity to study at Edinburgh University in Scotland, which he would not have had that opportunity if he was born in America.
Now tell me about that. Why? What's different? What was different for him being in Canada?
Because back in the 1800s, Canada was welcoming people from America, welcoming slaves, and also creating schools and creating opportunities for runaway slaves and their children, and America was not. So, and also Canada was at that time, a deeper part of the British Commonwealth, and because of that, he had enormous opportunities. And so he was able to go to Edinburgh, Scotland, and study there and become a master engineer. And then when he came back to Canada, the thing is, he had so much education, he had outgrown Canada. Because Canada, at that time in the 1800s, they had one rail line in this town called York, which eventually became Toronto. But he was like, "I can't stay here. I have to go to the center of steam engine technology and railway technology," which was Ypsilanti, Michigan.
Ah, so that's how he ended up going to work in the States.
Exactly. Because, when I was writing this play, I realized that there are a lot of similarities between now and then. Like, you know, I've got two daughters. And if one of my daughters said, hey, I'm going to run off to, you know, Cupertino, California to study how to make an iPhone with Steve Jobs, I'd be like, what? What is this iPhone? Like, what are you talking about? But that's basically what happened to Elijah McCoy. He ran off to Scotland to study with one of the foremost experts in thermodynamic technology at the time. And it's hard to remember because, you know, we are living in 2023, but back in the 1800s, steam engines were, it was a dangerous technology. It was brand new. And we all knew that, you know, something amazing was going to come from it. But at the same time, a steam engine is basically this big iron pot that you put water in and you heat it up and it creates steam and then it creates power. But those, when you do that, they can explode. They can kill people. Like it was, it, we didn't really understand how to harness steam engine technology at the time. And to be honest, it's the same way that we look at artificial intelligence today. Right now, you and I, trust me, like we both, I'm sure, have smartphones. I see one on the table right here. And there's artificial intelligence already working on taking information from us and dealing with it in the internet. And there are things that we're concerned about with how artificial intelligence, you know, what will happen with it. But that was the same way that they were dealing with steam engines and trains and technology.
So he was really studying the cutting edge of technology for his time.
Absolutely.
Right.
And he was a young black kid from Southern Ontario.
Yeah.
Born and raised. And
it's
so
a great story, and sad that this piece of Canadian history has been missing for so long.
Well, to be very honest, a lot of Canadian history misses is not taught in high schools.
Yeah.
And I'm very frustrated about that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, but nonetheless, it's, so he's one among amongst many Canadian figures who have not been taught.
The Blythe Festival is well aware of the point Andrew makes here. Canada's history is filled with rich, complex characters and exciting stories, yet far too many of them are being lost. And not just from our schools, also from our screens and our stages. This is one of the reasons telling Canada's stories is so central to Blythe's mission. You'll hear more about this from Blythe's artistic director, Gil Garrett, in our second half. But first, I was interested in why else Andrew was so excited about this story. This story of a young black kid who grew up in Southern Ontario and wound up changing the world.
Well, you know, it's funny. Part of the reasons why I wrote a play about him is because as I was reading about his life, I was like, I know what it's like to be, you know, a young African-Canadian kid growing up in Ontario, because I'm born and raised in Ottawa, even though my parents are from Jamaica. And also, I know what it's like to dream and to try to, you know. And I loved growing up. I grew up in this area outside of Ottawa called Nepean.
I know it.
Oh, you know it?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, great.
I lived in Ottawa for a while.
Sandra Oh is also from Nepean as well.
She is.
No, I'm just saying. So very famous people come from Nepean.
It's a hotbed of creativity.
I know, exactly, yeah. But I also know what it's like. I remember very distinctly, like, the time of the year when the farmers are putting the you know, stuff on the fields, you know.
The stuff that doesn't smell so great?
The stuff that doesn't smell so great that I won't mention here. But yeah, I just know what it's like to, and the black flies, and I love the fact that I knew what he knew when he was growing up as a child.
Mm.
So that was interesting to me. And also the idea that, yeah, he was somebody who had an opportunity to do something more.
Yes. And he took it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Let's move forward a little bit, because I want to talk about, like, the play is not just a biographical piece, although it does present his life story in a fascinating way, but it's also really rich. It's got all these dynamic characters in it, fascinating history, and some really deep and thoughtful themes running through it. You mentioned earlier about how you would react if one of your children wanted to take up the cutting edge of technology. So this happens to Elijah in your story, and he has a bit of a falling out with his father. Mm-hmm. So I see this theme of fathers and sons in this work. So can you talk to me a bit about that?
Absolutely. Because You know, one of the things about the 1800s is that it was at the cutting edge of the beginning of the modern age. And, you know, life in the late 1800s and early 20th century, we saw the predominance of technology and what it was doing to people. And I just thought that, you know, here you would have this young kid who went to study, you know, in Edinburgh, Scotland at the same time. So it, like Elijah McCoy was in Edinburgh, Scotland at the same time as Adam Smith when he was writing, like creating capitalism, mm-hmm. you know, like the world, our modern world was being created very much so in Scotland and in Edinburgh, Scotland. So imagine him coming back to a world that was pre-modern and what would happen if you were to talk to your father who was born in that pre-modern world. And, you know, like, like a lot of men, I know what it's like to, you know, communicate with your father, trying to communicate to them that you're your own person and that there's a new world and that it's hard for fathers sometimes. And I learned that with my own children, that it's hard sometimes to realize, oh, there's a new world that's happening and that I have to actually acquiesce and realize that they're going to become their own person. And so that's part of what the play is about. Partially what the play is about a son and a father dealing with the fact that they are, that the son is becoming something more and something what the father, like fathers, we want our children to go beyond us, but when they actually do, sometimes it's not what we expected.
Yeah, in many ways, this is a typical conflict between a father and a son. Unfortunately, in this story, it doesn't really resolve itself. And that's one of the, well, you tell me, is that one of the burdens that Elijah carries?
I think it's one of the burdens that everybody carries. You know, like I think everybody has conflicts with their parents, and you want to be able to resolve them before your parents pass on. That's just the way of humanity. And I know I was lucky to be able to resolve my conflicts with my dad before he passed on. But then I thought, when I was writing the play, I thought, yeah, but what if we hadn't, you know? So, and that I know I have friends who are in that situation. And, you know, it's, and so dramatizing it, I thought this is something that would register with a lot of people. It's something that, you know, there's not a lot of information about Elijah McCoy's life, but interpolating what I could find, I just presented him as a human being, much like all of us who would have a relationship with his father and mother, and also everything that he went through is something, it doesn't matter whether you're in the 1800s or now, or dealing with losing a parent during the pandemic, it's something that it affects you.
Yeah. Well, this is part of what makes this place so beautiful.
Thank you.
Like I said, that at the top of our chat, it's not just biographical. It's really about the human experience.
Absolutely.
Which actually lets me run into my next question, which is about the second theme that I think I see in this mm-hmm. work, which is, and it's related also to this conflict Elijah has with his dad. Mm-hmm. And to what you were talking about earlier with regard to the evolution of new technologies. George, the father, comes mm-hmm. from a world of faith. Mm-hmm. He's a strong man of faith. And Elijah has gone to a new world where...
Of science, where
mm-hmm. his teachers are speaking to him about prying apart the two hands of God. So mm-hmm. he comes back from Edinburgh with this new understanding that maybe we don't have to accept the will of God. Mm-hmm. And this leads into a conflict with his dad too. But can you talk a little bit about that conflict of faith and reason and how it works into the story you've written here?
That is an eternal conflict that I've always been fascinated by. So, you know, Galileo's, like some of our most important scientists have been people of faith. And even to this day, there are, you know, people who have worked on quantum physics who are people of faith. And I always find it fascinating the conflict that must happen. There are people now who, I won't mention names, but there's a certain person who bought a social media platform who's talking about how AI is going to dominate humanity as though, you know, it were a god or something. And I just thought, like there's something about science. There's something about people in science who there's always a conflict between faith and a greater creator and what we human beings can achieve. And personally, and I know this is going to be a controversial statement, but we're just human beings. We're not gods. We're not. But every now and again, we get the feeling that we are, you know? And ultimately, there is a greater universe that we exist in with larger rules that will always win.
You're listening to the Blythe Festival Podcast. I'm Joanne Wallace, in conversation with actor, director, and playwright Andrew Moody. When we come back, Andrew tells us how writing this story forced him to learn about the second law of thermodynamics, and what this taught him about the human capacity to dream big despite adversity. If you haven't already, please check out our other episodes in this series. These include a chat with playwright Matt Murray about his new comedy, The Chronicles of Sarnia. You can also hear my two-part conversation with Blythe's artistic director, Gil Garrett, about his production of James Rainey's Donnelly trilogy. Now, here's a quick shout-out to you. If you're a member, donor, or sponsor of the Blythe Festival, none of these plays can happen without your generous support, and we so appreciate having you as our partners in this important work of telling Canada's stories. So thank you so very much. And now, back to my conversation with Andrew. I read an interview a little while back about this show where you had said, oh, the major theme of this work is entropy, which is the second law of thermodynamics. Mm-hmm. So first of all, I want to ask you, do I need to be a quantum physicist to enjoy this show?
Fortunately, no, because I'm not a quantum physicist. But it started because when I was writing the play, I appreciated, like I was reading about Elijah McCoy and I was reading about the revolution that he made to steam engine technology, but also I was like, well, but what does it do? And I said, I'm going to drill down and really try to understand exactly what it is he was trying to do with his invention. And ultimately, to create his invention, he had to have a deep understanding of the second law of thermodynamics, which is entropy, which is what William Rankine, you know, he was famous for in his
Can
works.
You tell us what entropy is in case anyone listening who doesn't know?
I'm going to give you an explanation that a physicist would be satisfied with. And what the physicist would be satisfied with would be, entropy fundamentally is the fact that quantum states have a potentiality to be more disordered over time. And when you talk to a physicist, you're just like, okay, quantum states, what does that mean? Like, you know, and ultimately what we experience and what any physicist will tell you is a cup of coffee in your house in the morning will always get colder. It doesn't get warmer. If anybody within the sound of my voice, if you have a cup of coffee that suddenly for no reason gets warmer, call me right away. We have to call. There's a bunch of physicists we have to talk to. But ultimately, everything decays. Everything spreads out. Everything, the heat from your coffee spreads out into the room that you're in. But also the same thing, and I hate to say this, but same thing with your bodies.
This is why we get old.
I know, exactly. We're just traveling one way in time. We go from being young and sprightly. I remember, as a matter of fact, during rehearsal, I thought I could jump off the stage just like I did 15 years ago when I was first hired here at the Blythe Festival. Yeah, no, I can't hop off the stage anymore. Yeah, that was a bad move. So that's ultimately what entropy is. And that's what Elijah McCoy in the story, to create this lubricating cup, what he's doing is he's fighting the entropy that happens in steam engines. And that's a technology that's still used today, even at NASA with rocket technology. And there's what he developed is something that really is, it's very scientific and it helps, but ultimately you can never, entropy is the supreme law of all science and there's nothing you can do about it. And I invited, actually, there's a physicist named Lee Smolin, who is considered the new Einstein of our era. And I invited him, actually, to talk to the actors to talk about entropy and about what it means and what it is. And, the thing about entropy is that it's, no matter what happens with quantum physics and all and AI and everything that's happening, that is one rule to the entire universe, or multiverse or whatever, that just remains for everything. There's no mathematical or scientific proof that contradicts entropy.
Right. So what we're talking about here is very theoretical. But mm-hmm. What's beautiful about this piece is that Elijah confronts this reality of entropy again and again and again throughout the course of his life, not so much in his work, perhaps, because the work is a puzzle where he just has to see, right? He has to look at it hard enough until he sees the missing piece or whatever he needs. But in other parts of his life where he loses people he loves, or he experiences the effects of racism on his career, because I've also seen you say that you see racism itself as a form of entropy in its, not so much in its technical sense, but in its philosophical sense of order descending into chaos and decay.
Well, and that's, I firmly believe that that's something that as a society, we always have to fight against. And I'm going to say something that may be controversial, but I fully believe that being Canadian, there's something about Canada where there is a guiding principle to being Canadian, where we guide ourselves towards being good to each other.
Well, thank you for that, because that's the perfect place for me to segue into my next question.
Oh, you're
now that
welcome.
We've discussed entropy, and all of the physicists out there listening to us are either happy, furious,
that's not
throwing up their hands.
There's an equation first, and let me tell you what the equation is. It's exactly E minus over C.
But getting back to this business of being Canadian and orienting ourselves towards niceness, you wrote this play 17 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's had a number of successful runs, mm-hmm. including one in the States.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you about that production in the States and how it's differed from your experience of producing the show in Canada. But first I want to ask, why did you decide to, why Blythe, like why bring it to Blythe 17 years after you wrote it?
It's funny, you know, because it was delayed because of the pandemic. We actually were planning on bringing it much sooner. But one of the reasons why is because Elijah is somebody who was born in Ontario. He's somebody who's an Ontario boy who, you know, born here, raised here, you know, raised in a small town and had big dreams, you know? And so that's one of the reasons why, I wanted this play to be done in Blythe. And at the same time, you know, during the pandemic, you know, we got to see a side of society that was not so good. And I just wanted to make sure that people understood that, you know, there's a goodness in all of us. There really is.
Yeah.
There's a goodness in all of us. That yes, bad things can happen. And during the pandemic, we saw some terrible things happen. But at the same time, I swear to God, I believe deeply in the goodness of humanity. And being Canadian and being from Ontario, because I've experienced it in my life growing up in Ontario in a small town just outside of Ottawa. I know that there are good people and there's a goodness that exists in this, and I wanted to celebrate it.
I spoke earlier to Blythe's artistic director, Gil Garrett, and I asked him about his choice to program The Real McCoy on Blythe's stages. He spoke at length about the importance of capturing this forgotten story for Canadian audiences, and you'll hear from him in a moment. Gil mentions Blythe's proximity to Elijah's hometown of Colchester, which is on the shores of Lake Erie, midway between Essex and Leamington. But what we didn't get a chance to discuss was the importance of Colchester itself to Black Canadian history. The town was, in fact, a destination for slaves escaping the U.S. via the Underground Railway, and later for freed slaves during and after the American Civil War. This is how Elijah's parents came to settle here, and how the small town became the birthplace of one of the world's great unsung geniuses.
The Elijah McCoy story, I mean, incredibly, Elijah transformed the modern world, I think, in a lot of ways. I mean, his inventions, especially the things that he made to improve locomotives, radically changed transportation. They radically changed shipping. It changed the pace of the developing world in North America. I mean, all over the world. And I think this play celebrates Elijah's accomplishments. And I think, again, too, I mean, as was the case in his lifetime, you know, Black history, Black stories were not in any way being treated with the respect and dignity that they deserved, and Elijah himself never had the acclaim that he deserved as a pivotal inventor of the modern world, and also the fact that the story is what I consider local, like it's southwestern Ontario. You know, he grew up in Colchester, which is not that far from Blythe, ultimately, and. So those pieces, and then on top of that, what Andrew did with Elijah's story, I think so beautifully captures not only the biographical, but also very much captures the personal and the spiritual, right? And by the end of the play, the final moments, you know, not to give anything away, but I mean, by the end of the play, Elijah is dreaming about outer space and what it would mean to create an invention that somehow engages with the stars, right? And that kind of ambition, and it's just incredibly inspiring. So I think to put an inspiring, heroic, innovative Black story on the Blythe stage, I mean, it's in many ways a no-brainer.
Every time I come back to Blythe, I love the audience. It's a great theater. And again, it just celebrates everything that I love about being Canadian, for everybody's just so generous with each other. We're so kind to each other. And it's just such a great town.
But tell me about that show, the time you did it in Michigan, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so what was different?
Oh, because in the play, Elijah McCoy, who's Canadian, goes down to America. And all of a sudden, I was working with actors who were American. They were like really American. And I was like, and the thing that I love actually about Americans is that they're so confident and so up in your business. They have no problem telling you how amazing they are. They have no problem at all.
So how did this translate into the show? Was it different? Did it feel different?
Absolutely. There were times, you have to come see the show, first off.
Well, but did you have to tell them to be more humble? Or?
Well, the guy playing the Canadian, absolutely. The guy playing the Canadian, who he was an amazing American actor. But I had to say, no, but you're born in Canada. So
tone it down,
yeah,
buddy.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Well, tell me about this particular production that's opening tomorrow. Mm-hmm. What's special about it?
The actors, the cast, they're amazing. What I did was I gathered a group of people together who I had worked with before, who I had known, and I just knew that they would be phenomenal in this show. And Gil was so gracious and amazing in allowing me to hire exactly who I wanted.
What are audiences going to be taking away from this piece when they come in to see it?
Well, you know what? I do have an answer, but I'm not going to tell you because you got to see it. Because it's the actors are so amazing with their emotions and with their performances that you'll be swept up. And we just had a run yesterday with an audience, and there was a standing ovation, you know, and I'm not bragging about me. It's because of the actors. It's because of them.
Standing ovation on a first preview.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. I want to sort of wind us up with a question about, well, this story is a little bit hard to categorize. It's a piece of history. It's entertainment. It's funny. It's sad. It's uplifting. It's everything. You know, we're examining our relationship with technology and the natural world and our struggle to reconcile them and everything. So I know audiences are going to make up their own minds about what this story is about to them. But I'd like to know, what is this story most about to you?
At its essence, the real McCoy to me says, no matter what adversity you face, keep fighting. No matter what. Whether it's the second law of thermodynamics, which is the supreme law of the universe, whether it's, you know, your boss screaming at you, whether it's maybe you've just been dumped by a girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever, just don't give up. Believe in yourself and keep going, no matter what.
You've been listening to actor, director, and playwright Andrew Moody here on the Blythe Festival podcast. Andrew's been speaking about his play, The Real McCoy, on stage this summer at the Blythe Festival Theatre. Thank you so much for joining me for these conversations. Other episodes in this series include my chats with artistic director Gil Garrett about all things Donnelly and with playwright Matt Murray about his new comedy, The Chronicles of Sarnia. Later this fall, we'll have an episode for you about A Huron County Christmas Carol, which opens November 30th. This is a very funny and very moving Canadian retelling of this beloved story. Scrooge owns a flour mill in Goderich. Fezziwig's ball is a barn dance. It's a wonderful way to celebrate the holidays, and I hope you'll join me for that conversation coming later this fall. I'd also like to thank you for listening and responding so positively to this pilot series of the Blythe Festival podcast. We know now you're hungry for more, and we will be back next year with a full season to celebrate Blythe's 50th anniversary. Every new listener helps, though, so if you like this podcast, please tell your friends about it and share it widely on social media. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, consider leaving us a review and a rating. And finally, if you have a private comment or a suggestion about what you'd like us to cover here, please reach out to us on whatever channel is most comfortable for you. Connecting with our community is what Blythe is all about, so don't be shy. Until next time, I'm Joanne Wallace. Thanks for listening.